Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're back for another short. This one on a great topic here, the Ravens secondary, which was per PFF, just selected as the best secondary in the entire NFL. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how they might move the pieces around. And joining me to do that is Ben Mihal. Ben, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Excited to talk about what should be a really good position group this year.
Yeah, it's maybe a couple of position groups, maybe 3 position groups, maybe 4 if you include Dimeback, but certainly a great group of players and one of the real strengths of the Ravens. So, you know, you selected this topic. Where would you like to start?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had this thought of this just coming off of the Jaire Alexander signing, which was kind of paired with the Ardarius Washington injury, unfortunately. So I think we have, you know, clearly a lot of talent, but also some interesting things to get into about like how they're going to deploy this talent. So I feel like that's a good place to start, which is kind of my first note is you don't get points for being deeper or more talented or having the deepest secondary. And I almost equate it to like an NBA team where, you know, you could go 8-9 deep or whatever, but you need to get the best 5 on the field.
Yeah, and you need college team in particular. That's true. College teams
exactly.
Could be 5 deep or 10 deep. Yeah.
And I had it as a note that I had from watching NBA playoffs where the Thunder were this super deep team, 10, 11 good players, but there were games where you kind of felt them struggling to figure out where to get their best 5. And I kind of had this, you know, light bulb moment of like, oh, I kind of see the similarity. Like I was thinking about the Ravens anyway. And, you know, injuries might solve some of these problems, unfortunately, and make some decisions for us. But the way I see it is there's kind of a clear 5 right now. But as we've talked about and you've talked about a lot, with especially as it pertains to Hamilton being in the slot close to line of scrimmage, like what's the best way to get these guys weaponized in the best possible way? It could be matchup dependent. It could be health dependent. There's a lot of different things. So I kind of wanted to look at that and then also just take a step back and try to understand why we were struggling so much last year. So go ahead there, Ken.
Right. Well, certainly the why were they struggling, I don't think is too much of a mystery, which is why it was so solvable in season, you know, that they were able to get move 2 guys into the back end, replace the 2 cylinders that weren't functioning. It kind of reminds me of an ancient Simpsons episode. I don't remember if it was the first season or the second, but they took in a foreign exchange student from Eastern Europe. And the Simpsons have been on so long that Eastern Europe was still, you know, under the Soviet umbrella at that time. A lot of people today, they don't even know that, you know, the Soviet Union was before they were born. Anyway, the guy comes in from Eastern Europe and they love him and they don't miss Bart at all. And Homer says, I guess it's pretty obvious which cylinder wasn't firing. And that's exactly what I feel like the last few games for the Ravens were that, you know, it was really clear then what cylinder wasn't filed. Roquan's play improved, a whole bunch of other things improved about the defense too. And it went from a, you know, a very much a struggling bottom of the league unit against the pass to the very best just with those two changes.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it brings up a lot of good points, especially about Roquan, where I was actually rewatching a few of the early season games from last year. And the first thing you notice independent of Roquan is a lot of palms up, a lot of guys talking after a big play, a lot of palms up. And then, you know, without fail, you're seeing Stevens, you're seeing Williams kind of like maybe close to the play, but not quite where they should be. Obviously, I can't pretend to know what play call they were in or who responsibility was what, but like the breakdowns were crazy. And I think it affected Roquan a lot. I think he looked slow and indecisive early in the year, and it's hard to understand if that was an injury, if that was conditioning, if that was just not trusting what was happening behind him. And the same with Simpson too.
Yeah, one of the things that's true if you look at PFF grading is they, to my mind, probably overcharge the underneath defender between levels 2 and 3. So yeah, there's a pass off that occurs between level 2 and 3, and the linebackers can't carry their coverage forever. They really need someone to hand it off to. They need the safety to know what he's doing behind them, and they need to work in unison to close down that area as much as you can. It's still a very vulnerable area in the NFL, particularly for tight ends. But, you know, Roquan looked worse than he was for at least two significant reasons. The first was they couldn't trust the safeties. The second was he's asked to do a lot more pass coverage than he might normally be. You'd use Roquan Moore as a pass rusher. They did use him like 94 times or something last year as a pass rusher. So it wasn't nothing, but it wasn't as, you know, they had to give more of that play had to go to Simpson because Simpson's very limited in terms of what he could do in coverage and what you could trust him to do properly. So Roquan was asked to do a lot of things he just was not perfect at. And it was great to see his play improve so much when the defense got back to having good safety play.
I had an interesting hypothesis about this too, exactly on your point here, which is Zach Orr went from being Roquan's position coach to the defensive coordinator. And we know Roquan's a pretty like vocal guy. And I had this kind of feeling like you can almost see the meetings with Roquan telling Orr, yeah, I can do this. Of course I can handle this, you know, and that not playing out on the field quite that way. And to your point, they obviously, you know, put some of these fires out as the season went on. And a lot of credit to Orr in that as well.
Yeah, Dean Pease came in. One of the things that Chuck Smith actually was the one who said at camp this year, and a lot of times I don't completely, you know, there's a lot of coach speak that goes on in the interviews, but this thing I really believe. Chuck Smith said all of the turnaround on the defense is due to Zach Orr. He's the guy who fixed 100%. This thing. It wasn't anybody they brought in from the outside. John Harbaugh came in, was involved in looking at some of the secondary stuff, spent more time with the defense than he normally does. Wasn't him either. Zach Orr is the guy who got up in front of the players and breathed fire at them and got them to listen and get their heads on straight.
And you're right. There is a lot of coach speak that goes on usually, but I don't see Chuck Smith is not a traditional coach. He's very new to coaching. And he's a guy that clearly wears his emotions on his sleeve. So I loved that from him. And I don't think in that case, he was kind of just blowing, you know, trying to boost up Orr there. I think he had been feeling that for a very long time and it kind of all exploded in that press conference, which was really nice to see. Cause I see a lot of promise in Orr and but the way he changed, put out the fires and made the changes through the season, as we kind of pull this back into the secondary talk, like that shows you that he has a lot of talent as a coach and a lot of ability to kind of like change on the fly and put a good system together as they went down the backstretch and were a really good secondary and a really good defense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and talk. Would you like to start at safety or start at corner? Where do you want to start?
Yeah, let's start at safety because all this kind of, before we even get into safety, just say, in my mind, I see the starting lineup, quote unquote, being, you know, Wiggins and Humphrey on the outside, Starks and Hamilton at safety. And then as we move into a nickel package, I'm going to assume that Humphrey is the lead nickel this year and you put Jair on the outside. And to me, that's pretty obviously the best five. So
I agree. Best five. And I think that the one element to that that could change a little bit is Awuzie splitting some time with Alexander. That won't necessarily happen. Alexander's probably the better player at this point, but they may try and preserve them both from injuries by reducing snap count for both.
Agreed 100%. And I also think, you know, like, Alexander has been banged up a lot in recent years, and he isn't somebody that's had these, like, major, you know, one incident season ending injuries. He's had a lot of nagging injuries. So, like, last year he was in and out of the lineup a lot, and to me that screams like good candidate for rotating snaps. So yeah. And then, you know, just talking about slot a little bit, I think this was you know, I just said we were going to talk safety, but just because you kind of queued it up there, like, Humphrey clearly is very comfortable in the slot. Clearly, even before they made the changes halfway through the season, there was an emphasis on getting Humphrey inside, closer to the line of scrimmage a little more. And, I mean, he was first-team All-Pro in that position last year. So, you know, I don't see any issue with Hamilton starting on the back end, other than we know how valuable he can be as he's moving forward, too. So, as we get to safety, I actually wanted to start with Starks a little bit. I know that you were kind of favoring Amunwari over Starks as in a vacuum in the draft. And I totally get that. I think Amunwari maybe has higher ceiling potential, but I do think that Starks had a much higher floor as a player. And I think, especially now that we know that we really have a glaring vacancy at one of the two safety spots, I have free safety, strong safety written down. I don't think that really exists in the NFL anymore. But I think that Starks really, like, has a lot of value now as a guy that can step in and play from day one. I think that's the expectation. And yeah, I'll let you jump in there.
Well, he's got to be able to take that single high role, exactly. Whenever it's necessary, he's got to be able to take it. And I don't think there's a lot of need for Starks to, have versatility. It's something he certainly had in college, where he could be pretty much the player Hamilton was and play any of those three positions, including slot. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's what the Ravens need him to do. The Ravens are desperately, desperately short a free safety. And if anything were to happen to Starks, I mean, you know, this team is in some serious circling the drain situation in the secondary. They're going to have to make changes, and it's, you know, it'll be Hamilton moving to free safety, I'm sure, if that were to happen, which again, you know, takes his card from the ace of spades at slot corner to the queen of hearts at, you know, the strong safety or off safety or whatever you want to call it. Half split field safety. And then, you know, he's probably a jack of clubs at free safety. He's still a good player, but you're really reducing his personal value within that system. So Starks, I don't think the Ravens want to try and tap into his versatility. I think they need him, get him to play that position well, and they really want to keep him there the whole year.
I had the exact same note. I think that part of his player profile coming out of Georgia was that he could go into the slot and things like that. But right, I'm not really interested in that versatility. And I actually was thinking about Hamilton's rookie season, where, again, he has all these abilities. He's a super versatile player, but clearly he was overwhelmed mentally early in that season. And he really took his game to another level when it was, you're the slot, every single play, and the defense really clicked into place there. So, again, like, one, I think I agree completely. Starks needs to be able to play that back half, back center himself confidently and communicate confidently. And then I think, you know, we need to be potentially ready for some early season struggles and hope that he can just kind of settle down as the season goes on and just be a rock back there.
The good news about this is there's no other solution. So from that perspective, Malachi Starks is not going to be benched because of poor play with any kind of alacrity. It will happen only if it doesn't work out over the course of probably at least half a season.
That's right.
If he's going to be in there to start, he's a rookie, and they're depending extremely heavily on him to deliver for what is a championship caliber team.
No, exactly. Now the good news is that Hamilton, as we move to him, is pretty clearly one of the smartest players in the league, and has literally been through this himself, you know, a few years prior, as we were just touching on. So you could do a lot worse in terms of somebody to be in the room with you every day. Really, you know, I'm sure they're going to be talking nonstop. And yeah, just, you know, enough's been said about Hamilton, but I, you know, thought it was great that, you know, he had been rated the number one safety in the league by these NFL execs, which, you know, then we see that they have Lamar at 4, which is a whole different podcast and conversation into itself. But nice to see Hamilton get some of that recognition. Also saw something else where he was ranked the top player under 25 in the league, which I think is probably, I agree with that. But yeah, like Hamilton, his ability to handle so much mentally is the thing that I think gets undercovered a little bit, just because he's so imposing physically. He's such a great like playmaker at all levels. And, you know, I was just thinking about how, like, when you see the ball in the air and you're not necessarily, you know, especially on TV copy, like not sure what the coverage is, wherever he is. If you see Hamilton there coming into the frame, you're generally pretty happy if that's where the ball's going. And I trust him completely to be, you know, underneath in the slot, to trail a receiver from the slot or on the back end as well.
Yeah, trailing coverage is not Hamilton's specialty. It's he can do it against a tight end, but I don't want, you know, it's not ideal against a wide receiver. It's one of the ways that Hamilton needs to jam that guy off the route. What I have really liked from Hamilton last year is the ability, the obvious leadership qualities the guy has. And particularly in the touchdown given up, I think it was to Van Jefferson in the playoff game against the Steelers. A deep ball, probably right along the numbers on the left sideline in the end zone, over the top. Stevens gave up on coverage, and Hamilton was pissed.
He
came over, and he gave him an earful that extended well after the play was over. And I don't like head shaking, kind of head on an angle, kind of on-field emoting. By the way, you mentioned the on-field emoting earlier. You can't, it's almost no way to know better what was supposed to happen than watching who's pissed off after the play.
Absolutely.
It absolutely gives you incredible insight into what the play call was. And you know, players are not shy about it. Accountability is important in any kind of sports. And you know, pro football players really depend on each other to do the right thing behind them. You trust the man behind you. That's what that means. You want him to be in the right spot. You expect him to be in the right spot. But Hamilton doing that kind of thing is good. I think he was really, really upset that time. It wasn't a head wag, but he was clear. He wanted to talk to Stevens, and Stevens wanted no part of it. You know, it was clearly Hamilton was not taking no for an answer under those circumstances. Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey, to a greater extent, will show up another player on the field by turning their head, cocking their head a certain way. I'm not a fan of that. Marlon Humphrey's a great player. Marlon Humphrey's a very good leader, I think, as well. He just doesn't need that particular part on the field. I wish he wouldn't do it. But anyway, with Hamilton, I think, you know, he'll be the leader of this defense going forward when Roquan is done. He'll have I'm pretty sure he will take the green dot at that point. But I really appreciate what I'm seeing in terms of on-field leadership in that sense.
Yeah, I think two things on that really quickly on the body language. Watch either of the Bengals games from last year, watch both of them really, and just look at the body language of every defensive player, especially in the secondary. And these guys, their heads were spinning and they were like confused, frustrated, all of the above in both of those games. And Humphrey and others made a bunch of comments of after the second Bengals game, even though they're both wins, of just like, this is getting, you know, ridiculous, for lack of a better word. About Hamilton and the leadership, I almost see him and Roquan as like a tandem these days. I think the two of them have a lot of communication together. And I really, really love Hamilton's demeanor as kind of this quiet but super fiery kind of guy. His head's clearly a great head on his shoulders. Yeah, so I mean, right, we could do a whole podcast, and you already did on Hamilton. Absolutely, yes. I mean, Hamilton is, you know, definitely one of my favorite players, and I'm so happy he's turned into that. The biggest question about the safety room is backup safety, and I have this first thing here, and I know you had sung his praises before. Like, this team missed Darryl Worley last year, and he's somebody who's out there still, and, you know, I really appreciated his being able to convert from corner to safety for the Ravens in 22 and 23, and he was out there a decent amount, and I always felt like he was able to kind of settle things down back there, you know, understand his limitations and be a nice physical player at the point of attack with like receivers and things like that.
You know, he only played 9 games last year. So he started 7. So effectively he didn't really play even a full season. And yet he had 52 tackles last year for the Titans. The guy still can bring it in that sense. He's a player that I think could have played that half field role again for the Ravens. Now, I will say this, he didn't look that good in camp last year. So I do understand why the Ravens stayed with Jackson over Worley. They also, I think, they guaranteed Jackson's salary as well. So they would have had to basically double up at that position. But they could have kept Worley also instead of, say, Bo Braid. And I think that might well have been the right call. There's a sometimes you have a developmental player who gives you a lot of hope. Bo Braid is not exactly that. He was a good downhill player in last year's preseason. We never really have seen anything from him to indicate to me that he can play the back end. And so far in the mini camp stuff, he really hasn't even played the back end. It's been Kane who's been back there more. Braid's played a little bit of back end. I don't want to shortchange him entirely on this. But he's not high in that rotation of players they're looking at in even this offseason. So it'd be interesting to see at camp next week where they start out and how they're looking to use Braid. Good special teams player, helps the team there. He'll always be on the cusp of the roster for game day activations. He'll get there if the special teams or the safety room is a little short, and he might not get there if they're short at another position where they have a special teams option, like say Tez Walker, who could do some of the things he does, but they're a wide receiver short, say. So to me, Worley versus Braid was an interesting call. I actually think I hate saying this, but Bo Braid is the kind of player. There are a lot of guys in that size and shape pool who have approximately his skill set that are available among first and second year players on a typical basis. So if you got Bo Braid as an undrafted player, that should tell you there's another Bo Braid in the next draft as an undrafted player. And it's not that critical to get him. So in this case, the Ravens went with an older player already in Jackson, and they may have thought, we don't want that much age on their safety room. And so they maybe didn't want Worley for that reason. And then when Worley didn't look good in camp, he kind of made it easier on the Ravens in terms of their decision-making.
Yeah, which leads kind of to the big question, right? Like, what is going to happen down there? I didn't realize that we had seen Kane a little bit in the back. I think, you know, Kane and Braid both have this ability on special teams that's going to keep, you know, one, if not both of them active. Kane, I assumed, could probably be, you know, an interesting option at dime linebacker, maybe as he grows, or maybe that's his potential that might not even be realized this season. So I think it leads us into assuming that neither of those guys are going to be the answer for the third safety, is who is, and, you know, is the deep cornerback room maybe the best place to find one of these guys? So you've talked a lot about Humphrey, potentially long-term switching to safety. I see the vision, but, I also think, like we've already touched on, they like Humphrey close to the line of scrimmage, and they like him in the slot there. So I'd be surprised if that ends up being it. Jalen Armour-Davis, maybe TJ Tampa, you know, slightly bigger corners. I've heard a little rumblings of JAD kind of having that role. So what do you think about that?
Well, let's start. JAD and Tampa are two really great questions. So they've had multiple chances so far this offseason to try out different guys at safety. And JAD was back there. A lot more is made of it than what it actually was. Just a handful of snaps on the back end, I would say.
Yeah.
It really did not play much. And honestly, JAD better learn how to play safety, because he's already in a lot of hellacious amount of trouble in terms of making this team at corner. So it would do him very well to say, yeah, put me at safety, coach. I'm eager to be a two position guy. Kane has gotten the best chance of the players on the back end. Braid also had an injury where he ran into somebody. I think he might have had a knee contact that caused a problem, caused him to miss some time. So, you know, part of it is that, but Kane is clearly ahead of Braid, as I see it, in terms of that half field back end role. And that said, I'm not real optimistic about Kane's prospects there either. I think Kane is more likely a good dime back candidate. There are some other characteristics you want at dime that I'm not necessarily saying Kane has, but he's a great downhill player, like Braid, and either one of them I think are potential dime candidates. I'll just say that Kane is ahead of Braid right now in terms of the back end. I wouldn't rule out the Ravens going out and getting another safety, and the name that I think is most likely to be the backup option, particularly if anything breaks down in terms of their depth as we go through camp, is Chuck Clark.
Yeah, I was trying to come up with some names of who might be available, and Clark is on that list, and I think that's very interesting. Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of these guys that are name recognition guys. Now, whether where they are at this stage of their career, it's hard to totally know. And if you're on the street at this point in the year, there's a reason for that. But yeah, I'd be interested to see what Clark has left in the tank. I don't think he was a great fit for the Jets the last few years. He had the injury, unfortunately.
Yeah. The good thing about Chuck Clark is he won't let you down on where he's supposed to be. He understands the defense. Talk about smart guys in the secondary room. They made some comment recently about Jalen Armour Davis being the smartest guy in the secondary room. You got Malachi Starks. You got Hamilton. Chuck Clark there. I mean, are you really serious? You really trying to convince me that JD is the smartest guy in the room? I don't doubt that he's a smart guy. He's lacking in some real football skills, but I always say don't overstate it. Sense. And
that's your coach speak that we were talking about before.
Yes.
Yeah. Now as we're getting into kind of veteran options, maybe in free agent, I also had this thought the other day that there are going to be guys that are going to get released potentially, or maybe even, you know, there's some teams that are like trying to be competitive this year. The name that I thought of on a team that will not be competitive this year is the Saints. And so I was thinking Tyrann Mathieu could be interesting if he's still out there. I'm sure his legs don't quite have that much left, but clearly a smart guy, clearly a guy.
So Ben will be back in a moment. I think Tyrann Mathieu is somebody he's mentioning as a possible return or possible entrant to Baltimore from the Saints. I guess that's possible. He wouldn't be the obvious selection to me. I don't know what he would cost, but he could be somebody that if you add him to this room, you're probably adding some money and you're probably adding some significant depth from that perspective. So we're going to see if Ben rejoins us in a second. Otherwise, I'm just going to move on with some other topics here. He's got a list of names: Justin Simmons, Quandre Diggs, Marcus May, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, Julian Blackman, Jordan Whitehead. Frankly, it's the same names as last year. It's a lot of the same guys are available again. You know, Marcus May, they went through an instance where I think he was picked up by the Chargers, if I recall correctly. And the Chargers lost to the Ravens and jumped them in the waiver order, where Marcus May actually might have been a guy the Ravens also put a claim in. But that was in that Week 12 game that occurred. So anyway, we're trying to see if Ben will come back here. Let's see. Ben, you there?
Yep.
Okay, good.
And to your point, if you're available at this time, like we said, like there's for a reason. And last year, Eddie Jackson was a name on this list, and we all know how that worked out.
Yeah. I think, you know, it is one of the reasons I think the Ravens might wait till the end of camp to make a Chuck Clark signing. I don't think he really needs to learn the defense anew. I think, you know, Orr is very familiar with what Chuck Clark has done for this team. But the other thing is that the Ravens may have some guys they like they couldn't sign as undrafted, who went to another team that they know from a scouting perspective can do the job and also might be a multi-year solution. And those guys, if they may decide they want to try and target one or two of those, if either get released and then pull the trigger on a Chuck Clark signing, if they had to, or somebody else, could be Mathieu, could be Simmons, could be somebody else.
So to tie the kind of the conversation up in terms of safety, like to me, based on what we're discussing, like it does make the most sense to keep Hamilton back there with Starks and kind of start with that being your two safety look, as frustrating as that might be, that you don't really get to unlock the full range of Hamilton there.
Yeah, I personally wouldn't feel the need to have Hamilton at slot corner every single snap. I think it might be a good alignment, but the Ravens have a lot of depth at corner. They don't have a lot of depth at safety. I understand, you know, you sometimes got to ask a player to do something that's not going to be his best thing. But I would really, really want to have the flexibility to go to it when the situation dictated it. And that includes playing Hamilton at dime, by the way, too, because you know, there's no obvious option at dime.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light. immediately asleep. The epic euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com, find your perfect gummy, and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Wise Hamilton's a great option.
I agree completely. And there's things you can do with rotations too, where you could have, you know, one of your corners lined up and rotate back and bring Hamilton down and kind of recreate those looks in some different ways. So I think that's a great way to lead into just talking about the cornerback room. You had done a nice little solo Jair Alexander expectations. I think this is a fascinating signing. I think, you know, he really can be your prototype corner who can give you playmaking out of zone. He can be sticky in a one-on-one situation. I was really intrigued. This is a few years ago now, but the Packers had him shadow Justin Jefferson for an entire game and pretty much shut him down. This is end of either 22 or 23 season. And, you know, Humphrey is clearly a top-level corner, but that's not always been kind of the way that he's been deployed. And so I think Alexander and then pairing him with Wiggins, who's shown a lot of this potential to kind of evolve into a Jair Alexander-level player, gives you two guys that could really, you know, not necessarily play right side, left side like the Ravens have more traditionally done, mix things up a little more than they have usually done there.
Yeah, the ability to travel will be a really interesting one. But both those guys are pure outside corners. They're not going to play, neither is going to play in the slot. They're both length guys who just give you more on the outside. By the way, my expectations this year would be that Wiggins would outplay Alexander. He's younger. You know, obviously you've got the injury and durability concerns that go with Alexander being greater than Wiggins. And I honestly think that at this point in their in each careers, that Wiggins is ascending, and Alexander, he might stay on the same level, which he's done now for a number of years, regardless of how many snaps he's played, or he might decline. But I don't see him ascending to all-pro level the way I could easily see Wiggins doing.
Yeah, and let's talk about it with Wiggins, because I think the Ravens, and this is most players, but if you have a strong rookie season, like somebody like Wiggins does, year two is when you can really get a chance to see that jump quickly. And you kind of, you'll know quickly, basically. But yeah, like Wiggins played on the stretch, being able to play left corner, pretty much 100% of the snap share late in the season. They were rotating the other side across from him with Stevens and Tre'Davious White. Exactly. Yeah, like Wiggins absolutely has the all-pro potential. And something I do like about Wiggins and Alexander, even though they're both, you know, Wiggins is a slighter guy, they're willing to get in there and run defense also, and kind of, you know, stick their nose in there, like mix it up a little bit. And I think that gives a lot of versatility to the whole unit as a whole, that ability. Yeah.
You know, I've been watching a lot of the 2000 Ravens again, just is something I've been enjoying and a project I'm working on. But the 2000 Ravens corners don't get involved in run tackling at all. The greatest run defense, you know, of our generation and maybe in NFL history. But certainly you wouldn't expect that to be the case, but it's really nine against 11 in terms of run defense. Starks and McAllister almost never get involved in the play. So it's, they seem to have orders to stay out of the play is how I would describe it, by the way.
It's very interesting. And, you know, you and I are coming off of a chat about injuries, injury luck, preventing injuries. And that's something where I love that Wiggins plays this way, but I do have some trepidation sometimes of him. Teams maybe potentially targeting him. I think we saw last year the Jets had a lot of trouble where teams were really isolating Sauce Gardner and trying to run at him when he was in the edges, especially out of like condensed formations. So I do have some thoughts about, like, you know, getting into that situation a lot with Wiggins. Jumping over to Humphrey, not a concern in run support. You know, he clearly excels there. And, you know, he showed the ability to play both outside and inside. I really like the idea of mixing him up in those roles. And then, to your point, bringing Hamilton down to the slot as needed. Yeah, go ahead.
Going back to Alexander for one second.
Yep.
It is one of the reasons I really love the specific deployment that we've been talking about here so far, which is basically Humphrey and Wiggins are your two corners on the outside in the base package. But then Humphrey moves inside of the slot when they go to nickel and Alexander comes in to play one side. And again, it could be split with the Wuzier. It could be a lot of things. And if, in fact, you could have a first down, your first down nickel could be a Wuzier period. I'd be fine with that. But the thing that would do is that would keep Alexander out of there for a lot of run plays. And I don't want Alexander getting hurt at all, but I really don't want him taking additional run play risk that risks your most vulnerable to injury player on the entire team. It's not what I would prefer to do.
I hadn't really thought of it that way, but you're definitely right. No, I mean, I don't think they're going to put him out there and intend for him to play 100% of the snaps anyway. But yeah, the fact that really flexing your depth in that way. And I do think Awuzie is a little more of a like physical kind of stoutly built player. So I do like him in his run support abilities as well. So no, that's a great point there, Ken.
All right, so let's talk about some of the remainder of the roster, because I think we've hit on the big three pretty effectively here so far. And you get down to Chidobe Awuzie, now who was thought to be a starter they were bringing in immediately. And maybe that had a better chance to be true when the team still had Ardarius Washington.
That's right.
That they had some flexibility to play the slot differently with Humphrey or with Washington, either one of them up in the slot instead of at safety.
Yeah, and right. I mean, Awuzie it's a very similar story to what we're talking about with Alexander, which is clearly a talented player. I really like the size of that position, but again, has kind of missed half of his games, half of the games the last few seasons. So really like the idea of toggling him and Alexander. And yeah, like I loved that move in a vacuum when it was made, and I'll be curious kind of what his expectations are of playing time as well, because now he's already the fourth corner, and we haven't even touched on some other players who could kind of get their names in the mix as well.
Right. I would expect for this team this year, I would expect Awuzie. And what that means is it's a pretty significant setback, the Alexander signing, for a player like TJ Tampa, who would be expecting a snap share bump in 2025 from his rookie year.
And that's really the player I was talking about. Like, we're talking about year two. That's really when you make the biggest strides. Tampa is a guy who unfortunately missed some time last year. And as you often point out, like, you can't get that time back. It's a big loss when you lose any kind of time in training camp or in your rookie season. But like, Tampa was a guy who last year I saw as a guy that had a lot of potential, like well-built again, has some positional versatility. He was very highly regarded pre-draft and he did fall a little bit. So, you know, I could go either way saying he's a steal, or you could say you are where you're drafted. Go ahead there.
There is a big drop off with speed in the 4.5s at corner. At 4.5, you might be okay. You don't have elite top end speed, but you might be okay. But every 0.01 matters as you drop through the 4.5s. And he clocked at 4.59 in the 40. That's going to drop you way down the draft board. And he hasn't really gotten a chance. I would say this year so far in OTAs, he's been one of the highest variance players. He's certainly made some big plays. He's made some good plays. He's been in position. He's knocked the ball away. I think he had one pick that I can recall. But he's also made a lot of bad plays, and he's gotten beat deep, and it hasn't looked good for him uniformly. And the other thing about it is, not only is he not completely succeeding at outside corner, but we haven't seen him at all as safety, which is something if you want to tap into who TJ Tampa could be at the top end, get that versatility going in year two. But the truth of the matter is, he really hasn't had enough total snaps on the field, not enough total live fire for the Ravens to do that yet. They have to kind of play what they have at corner, and we'll see. Maybe at some point during this preseason, we'll see him at safety.
Yeah, and to get into that kind of bringing a corner out to safety, sometimes I worry that I'm thinking in more of like a Madden fantasy football kind of, oh yeah, we've got this guy and he can't play corner, so let's just throw him back at safety. But in reality, like, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be going on ahead of time, whether it's in OTAs, training camp, the meeting rooms, etc. So to hear you say that, right, we haven't seen him back there once yet. Obviously, it might be a little more fan fiction than anything at this point.
Daryl Worley was actually a fairly similar player who had a 4.64 40 coming out of school. And the Carolina Panthers drafted him in theory as a corner, but almost immediately the talk was he would have to move to safety. Now he did. He basically was on and off at corner for his whole career, pretty much. I'm not saying it's over now for Daryl, but
that's
but,
right.
By the way, how old do you think Daryl Worley is?
He's probably 30 now.
That's exactly right. He's turned 30 in February. I was shocked to look thing and say that was his age 29 season he had last year.
I will mention that. Yeah, I think I saw what draft class he was in recently, so that kind of gave me a little clue in. But right, I mean, and that's the thing. Like NFL years are a little, it's almost like dog years sometimes. 30 can be old. We can talk about Derrick Henry another time as it pertains to age and 30 plus. I did want to kind of touch on the two rookies this year, because the Ravens did make an investment in the cornerbacks late in the draft this year. And we saw examples. I just wanted to point out that the Chargers took two guys in the fifth round last year, and those were their two starters last year, Tarib Still and Cam Hart. I'm not saying that Kone or Longerbean could be those guys, or they certainly don't have the opportunity currently as it stands for the Ravens, but not to sleep on them either as potential contributors.
I definitely would not sleep on them. Longerbean specifically is the club's backup corner, slot corner right now.
Yep.
So I think he'd be the first man up if something were to happen to Humphrey. And there's no obvious other choice on this team. I mean, if most of their corners, and that's what the Ravens look for, they draft for length and size to play the outside, and it's the right strategy. I mean, there's a lot more guys who are the right size and shape to play slot corner that you can pick up off the street, as opposed to there are guys who can play the outside and really have that prototypical 6'1", 6'2", 200 look you really love to have in an outside corner. So, you know, that 5'9", 5'10" guy you want on the inside, you can get him pretty cheap. And Longerbean is a guy who meets that requirement. He's actually a little taller. I think he might be 5'11", But he's been the guy the Ravens have had in the slot, and I'd say he's their number two slot as of right now if I were to create a depth chart of it.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I did have some notes about him potentially being the slot, but I also was thinking that the game has changed a little bit. I think offense and defensively, teams are starting to favor bigger players in the slot a little more. But the Ravens do have a history of going with kind of an undersized guy in the slot as far back as, you know, one of your favorites, Ladarius Webb. Tavon Young showed a lot of potential as an undersized guy in the slot. Ivy, yep, loved Corey Ivy. And then Ardarius Washington, you know, I mean, injury-plagued career, unfortunately, but they've always wanted to get him down there, it seems like. So, yeah, I like Longer Beam as kind of a small – I didn't realize he was 5'11". I kind of thought he was a touch smaller than that, but as kind of a smaller, muscled-up kind of slot-type guy, where I do see Kone being more of a projection to an outside guy down the road.
Yeah, that's what I would see as well. Longer Beam potentially has more special teams value, although there's no reason why Kone can't play special teams. Longer Beam just maybe has some return value there he could give the team at some point. Kone, I think the odds of him making the team are somewhat remote, that he's more likely to end up on the practice squad and be around for as needed. And he's the kind of player that the Ravens probably will end up losing at some point during the season as cornerback depth erodes across the league. And I expect that other teams will face the need for a Kone long before the Ravens will. So, unfortunately, I think they end up losing him. I don't think he'll make a roster. I don't think he'll make any team right away coming out of camp. I think the Ravens will cut him. They'll offer him the practice squad. He'll clear waivers. He'll go there. And then 4, 6, 10 weeks into the season, that's when you lose a Kone.
They could potentially stash him on IR if they, depending on how they feel about him as well. Just to kind of, because I do agree with you. If he's a practice squad guy, I would see somebody wanting to snatch him up as well. So yeah, that's interesting to see how that'll play out.
You got to really be careful with that, because if they put him on IR, they have to pay his full salary for the year. So it's an immediate cap hit. I don't think they would do that for you know what they would have, even though it's, you know, potentially 3 years you get out of him. The other big negative is you lose the developmental value of the season. So at least on the practice squad, he's practicing with the team. He's learning how to play football by the Ravens way. He's studying in the way he should, and you can continue that. But he's got to be out there at practice, or you're not getting a lot of the developmental value. So you can effectively redshirt a guy for the entire year and then pay him a full salary. It's just not something the Ravens do very often anymore.
Sure. No, that's a good point. And so, yeah, I think, right, we can do a whole other show on kind of the roster math, especially as we get down to the wire. I mean, knocking on wood vigorously over here, hoping to not see any major injuries in the corner room, especially in training camp. But yeah, I would hate to see it sorted out that way. That's for sure. Moving on to kind of the slot nickel options, I think we've touched on a lot of this already. And I think the big question is just who has more value playing slot. I'm talking about Humphrey versus Hamilton here, with the context of somebody has to be at safety in those situations. And so just any other notes you had on that potentially.
I mean, I think we have hit on it mostly. I think the Ravens' best five, season is mostly about nickel. And when it's about dime, it may be another guy entirely who's in there playing dime back. You know, it might be Kane, might be Braid, might be somebody like that who's in there, who's not in contention for any of the other spots as it is right now. But your best five are your best five. And that, that includes a back end of Starks and Hamilton and a front end of, the outside guys of Alexander, Wiggins, and then Humphrey in the slot. So I think
sure does. Sure does sound pretty good on paper when you say it like that. Still, I'm still kind of on cloud nine with the potential of this room. That's for sure.
Yeah, it is certainly exciting. We didn't really talk too much here about what has to happen if certain players go down. Maybe that's worth spending about 2 minutes on right now. But if Starks goes down, what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think if Starks goes down, that's kind of the nuclear. I mean, well, Hamilton going down is the worst case scenario. Starks going down, I mean, I think it's somebody off the street. I don't think it's Braid or Kane. I do think it's, you know, maybe it's your Chuck Clark. Maybe it's your, you know, veteran X who we're not even expecting to get cut in training camp right now. I've been fascinated with the Justin Simmons thing a few times, like for 2 years now. I know that you've kind of pointed to some metrics that show that he might be a player in decline, but I do think in a very, very specified role, he could still bring some value like that. But again, there's also going to be a cost associated with that. The Ravens might not want to pay, and another team could suffer that injury or feel that need sooner than the Ravens.
Right. I mean, you're always kind of chasing the price down when you as you go through the season and you have less and less options. I actually think Kane will be the first guy to get the back end. I think they'll allow him to fail in that position.
Interesting.
If they don't make the move to Clark before the season starts, it's kind of an indication. The Ravens are giving you an indication that they're okay with Kane as their next man up at safety if they go into the season and they don't sign a veteran.
I will say the Ravens are famous for kind of making that late training camp veteran move. And usually it's at edge rusher, but that's certainly not a need for the Ravens currently. I could see a lineman being brought, not that one, you know, negates the other from happening, but honestly, the spots I would see them most likely to do that at are maybe interior O-line. Not that I have the list of names of who that could be in front of me. Could also be a training camp cut, like we just said. And then safety, I think, would be the spot that we're going to see them kind of, you know, late into August, the Ravens sign whoever, and everybody goes, oh, yeah, that's a pretty good move. Didn't realize he was out there. It was a great price for him. So, yeah, I think they're going to insulate themselves. I'm interested in what you're saying about Kane. I never really thought that was part of his profile pre-draft even, and it's not like he showed anything other than a special team ability last year for us, but that's good to hear that he's getting some reps back there at the very least for now.
He's been talked about a fair amount as a player who's done very well. I think a lot of that is very overstated. It's coach speak.
Yeah.
I don't think we have a lot to go on. And the quarterbacks have been Cooper Rush and Devin Leary for almost every single snap. So I'm not particularly excited about what Kane has done so far. I'm encouraged, but I'm not excited. Okay. And that, you know, from that standpoint, I think he's separated himself from Braid in terms of his likelihood to succeed. I just don't, I'm not there yet in terms of he's the guy the Ravens won in 2025. By the end of camp, I could be. You know, I look at each of these preseason games as a fairly significant indicator of what the player might have to offer, and we'll see if that works out. And unfortunately, that's going to be a lot of Cooper Rush and Devin Leary on the opponents too.
It is, yeah. And you're right. I'll be curious what they decide. You know, you and I had this long injury talk about preseason a week or two ago. And I'll be curious who they put out there, if Starks gets any time in the preseason at all, or if they kind of put him on bubble wrap. I'm sure we won't see Hamilton, so somebody has to be out there with him. Yeah, there's probably somebody, you know, I'm not incredibly well-versed on the UDFA safeties and whatnot, but there could very well be somebody that pops in that regard.
Yeah, they've got two guys. They've got Keandre Jackson and Igbinosin, who I believe is Illinois. One is from Illinois State and the other is from Rutgers.
Yep.
And they're both UDFA guys. And I'm just going to say right now that I don't think either of them has played as well as Kane, and they've both been perpetually in the last unit of the groups that have been out there during the preseason. So neither of them is threatening to take the job from Kane right now.
Right.
So Ravens they moved along to this point. They seem to have, you know, be narrowing in on their guy. I think he'll be the one that'll get the real opportunity in the preseason.
Good. Looking forward to that. And then one name that we haven't said who is not a player at all is the Chuck Pagano effect. Mm-hmm. And clearly, you know, if he's the guy that's getting the coaching right now, I think I see that as a good thing. The fact they haven't looked to replace or supplement yet, I mean, it's a little scary. And you know, it's a lot of good talk right now in July, but if things happen in September and you're in need of a starting safety, you know, that's a big role for him to fill. So I would be surprised and, you know, I guess excited if he succeeds in that role, if it comes to that, obviously.
Right. Yeah. Pagano is a very non-threatening coach for Orr. I mean, Pagano, If Orr were to completely fall apart, if the defense were to fall apart and it not be injury related, then I think Orr's job would be in jeopardy. And potentially as early as during the season, he could lose his job or lose his authority within the job, which might be even worse. And Pagano might be the guy who would get it on an interim basis. But he's not a long-term defensive coordinator that I think is going to be around for the next 5 years for the Ravens, say, as the DC at his age. He's 65, I think, or maybe 64.
just a nice guy to have in the room, honestly.
Yeah,
and I'm wonderful. Sure a good guy to bounce things off with the lore. And right, if we're talking fire orb in eight weeks into the season, things will have to have gone really, really poorly. And yeah, seeing how badly they went in the first half of last year, to be worse than that would be a little scary to think about as well.
I think so. I think so. There's just too many pieces for this defense for it to go off the rails so quickly. I think it's actually more likely that Orr leaves the Ravens after this year and the Ravens get two third round draft picks out of it.
That's the more likely result
than he gets fired.
That's a great point.
Either of them might be 10 or 12%.
Yeah, no. If the Ravens are fielding a top three, top five defense, and you can really point to Orr doing something schematically, whether it's an evolution of the McDonald defense or kind of his own thing, where he's able to deploy all of these corners and outside edge rushers in a really successful way. You would hate to lose somebody like Orr, but that means that things have gone pretty well for it to get to that point as well. So I would probably take that.
Yeah, I mean, if Orr is lost to a head coaching job next year, sign me up for that right now.
That's the potential of Orr, by the way, a 35-year-old who's already in his second year as a defensive coordinator. I mean, he's clearly a super impressive guy. You hear him talk, and just to know his story and remember him as a player.
He's a much different coaching candidate than Todd Monken is. Todd Monken may or may not be the better coach. I really don't know, but he's been very successful working with Lamar Jackson and working with the talent the Ravens have. And he could be potentially filched by another team, but the likelihood is less than it is for Orr, because with Orr, you have the potential for a dynasty coach. You might get a 20-year guy instead of a 4-year guy.
I see Todd Monken as the Ravens equivalent to Steve Spagnuolo for the Chiefs, which is an incredible coordinator and somebody who everybody is well regarded, but is not a serious coaching candidate for most teams just because of their age and just kind of, you know, their history. I guess Monken was never a head coach, but I'll be curious. I mean, if they continue to roll out, you know, a top offense every year that he's been the coordinator, I'm sure he would demand some interviews in the next year or two, but not a dynasty option, to your point.
Right. And by the way, for those people who think Orr ought to be replacing John Harbaugh, I just say, get with the damn program. You know, first of all, if Orr leaves, it's not like you get nothing as a parting gift. You get two third round draft picks.
Oh, yeah.
Start to get excited about what that means. And then you still have John Harbaugh, and John Harbaugh has proven adept at building a staff and consistently bringing in good people who get promoted out into other positions around the league. It'd be a dream scenario if that were to happen, or because of what it would mean for the 2025 Ravens defense and their likelihood of winning the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing that you've seen from like Rams, 49ers, where they have this brain drain of, you know, losing their offense and defensive coordinator every year. And right. If we lose Orr, that would only be good things for this current Ravens team. I will say that Orr, you know, is a fascinating prospect as a succession to plan to Harbaugh if they wanted to roll things out like that. I mean, I do know that the Ravens want that continuity. I truly have no clue how much longer Harbaugh wants to coach for. It doesn't seem like he has any interest in slowing down just yet, but, you know, things in NFL, not for long, like things do change quickly sometimes. Who knows if there's, you know, health things or whatever, but I think he's intent on coaching, you know, with and against his brother for a few more years at least.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's hope so. Ben, great topic. Really appreciate talking about this. Good high value conversation, I think. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, on Twitter at Classic Mihal, that's MIHAL. Excited for this coming Raven season, waiting for training camp to get here, and excited to, you know, get to September sooner than later, hopefully.
All right. Lots of interesting things coming up. We're going to have a show on the offensive line that I'll point to. We could have a show just like we had on the secondary here for the offensive line. So that's a possibility. But this one's going to be on offensive line scoring and getting into the guts of the system, and why I've set my system up the way it is, as opposed to what PFF has, and you know what the pass block win rate give you, or just what looking at film gives you and potentially leaves you out on. But I'm going to go through that and hopefully explain that. I know I get requests fairly often to do that. If you're on YouTube, and you're watching this, please like and subscribe. I don't ask very often for that. And if you want to do something nice for the show, we haven't asked for Patreon money, but please write us a 50-word, 5-star review. That's always good. It drives traffic to this podcast. And we're always looking for new listeners. Done very well. We appreciate all the listeners out there and how loyal you are, how much you remember everything that's said on the show, seemingly. I know I say things a few times, so you have an opportunity to, but I really do greatly appreciate the loyalty of you folks and you're a great audience, and I wouldn't have it any other way. You people have been terrific. Ben, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.